You know what I love? I love when nobody has anything drama-related to say about any one of my teams. It's rare. It's rare when you're a DC sports fan to have that be the case. But it's starting to feel that way, isn't it? Nick Ashew on The Fan. I'm at Nick Ashew on Twitter and all the socials. It's all the same. The Commanders specifically, think about this for a minute. It's really all about football. Now, that doesn't mean there aren't a ton of questions. That doesn't mean there aren't a ton of things that you look at and go, yeah, but, or what if, or whatever. But it's all football related, you know? If you look at it across the board, offense, defense, it's about football. Who's going to be the number two receiver? Or, you know, do these coordinators show that they're actually, they belong in these positions as rookie coordinators? Or is the defense going to not be absolutely horrible like it was last year? Whatever the case is, it's all football related. And the rest of the NFC East, and this is what's great, I still look at the Eagles. It makes me want to vomit saying this, but I have to say something nice about one of the teams in the division because somebody's going to win it. I still look at the Eagles as the team that's, they're the team to beat in the NFC East, but that doesn't mean that they're not without their problems. Jay Brown, it's going to probably get resolved. He's probably getting traded after June 1st, likely to the Patriots, but that's hanging over their head. The Jalen Hurts thing is going to be a problem that's going to linger for a while. And again, I haven't said it on this show, but I will say this. My conspiracy theory is, to this day, that Jalen Hurts whole thing about his leadership and being rigid and not wanting to adjust to the coaching staff or any of that stuff that's out there, that was absolutely on purpose. And very specific, because if you're the Eagles, you're going to need a scapegoat at some point, and it can't be Jalen, or it can't be A.J. Brown. It's got to be Jalen Hurts, and here's why it can't be A.J. Brown. Because even though Jalen Hurts is still going to be on this team, if you want to trade A.J. Brown, and you want, the report is, they want a first-round pick and another top 100 pick around there. If you want to maximize, whatever it ends up being, maximize the return for A.J. Brown, a guy coming off of his worst year of his career, 29 years old, close to the dreaded 30 years old for a wide receiver. We all know how that goes. What are you going to do to kind of soften the blow of what the season looked like for him? You're not going to say it's his fault. He can't be tainted goods because you got to have a guy that's valuable enough to trade. So what do? Oh, you go to the source. Remember the assembly line of success I always talk about? Coordinators got to be able to call the right plays. Offensive line's got to protect the quarterback. Quarterback's got to be able to get the football to the wide receiver. It's the only way that a wide receiver, with all the money they get paid, it's the only way that a wide receiver is valuable to your team. If all those other things happen at least relatively well, not perfect, but relatively well. Well, they changed the offensive coordinator. Check. Offensive line, pretty good in Philadelphia, so that's not going to be a problem. Then there's the quarterback. And what do? Well, you know you're going to trade him this offseason, and you know that maybe down the road you might even move on from Jalen Hurts if the offense continues to look like it did last year. Now, has he gone through, what, six coordinators now in 6 years, essentially? Yep. Sure. But can he also struggle throwing it across the middle? Yes. Are there inconsistencies with accuracy with Jalen Hurts? Yes. Sure, there's the tush push. It's great. It's fun. But, you know, I guess you could try and do it every play. That would be fun. If the Eagles just literally tried to play rugby and just went up the field and just played it, just ran it every single play, see if they could get 10 yards in this first, I mean, be awful to watch, but at this point, you might have to. But if the offense looks anywhere close to what it did last year, so now you've blamed Jalen Hurts, and now you've got A.J. Brown looking like it wasn't his fault. So he gets traded. You get what you want for him. But now there's still the whole quarterback situation going on. The offense is still struggling. Well, you've already laid the groundwork. You've got your quarterback to blame. You've got the issue right there. And that's exactly what they want to do. And that's exactly what my conspiracy theory is that they were trying to do. They're looking down the road going, oh, okay, we're going to have to start setting this narrative up now. And then the Giants are in a whole other category in the NFC East where it's John Harbaugh's in there and he's making a point to say that he is in charge. I knew Dexter. The Dexter Lawrence trade, just you knew that was going to happen. The minute that a player with a new head coach asks for a trade, it's this back and forth battle, right? You could just tell. It's like, all right, I'm going to try to establish my power with the new guy. And the coach coming in and goes, I'm going to make sure that you guys know that I'm captain now. Especially somebody like John Harbaugh that was literally given all the control in the world. They have a figurehead for a general manager now in Joe Shane who does, I mean, has no power whatsoever. You think John Harbaugh was going to make sure that a guy that's demanding a trade, the minute they get there, coming off of the worst year of his career, is going to get what he's asking for? No, they were going to trade him. You knew that trade was coming from a mile away, but it's not done. Because then there's Kayvon Thibodeau talking about his trade, you know, him wanting to get out. He's, you know, cryptic on social media, because that's how you get your point across now. You put it on your Instagram story. That's how it works. Every single team in the NFC East but the Commanders, as of this moment, and that could change, is dealing with drama. The Cowboys, perpetual drama. It's in their roots. It's in their DNA. It's always going to be there. Don't tell me that because George Pickens signed his franchise tender that it's going to be fine. Oh, yeah, that he's just going to be happy playing on a one-year deal this year. No, he wants either a trade or he wants a long-term deal. And Jaron's going to want to give him what he wants right now. We like to negotiate, and it takes a long time. And then they want to get to know him a little bit more. The newness was the quote from Stephen Jones. Oh, you know what that means. That's the whole, like, yeah, we want to see if you're just going to be a complete headache, which is who George Pickens tends to be. So all of that together, it doesn't mean that these aren't teams that can't win games and it's going to be, you know, Commanders and everybody else in the division. No. But what I am saying is it's just nice to not have this team be surrounded by actual drama. Now, you're going to have contract disputes over time. It's just how it goes. We saw it last year with Terry McLaurin. But even that, you knew what the result was going to be. Or at least I did. Some people were panicking. I do remember that. I remember being told that I was the person that was the calmest about the Terry McLaurin holdout out of everybody on the station. I was like, it's going to get worked out. The trade requests aren't real trade requests all the time. Sometimes they are. But there's a process in holdouts that happens over and over and over again. And it didn't feel heated at all. George Pickens doesn't have a connection to the Cowboys. So why would he feel the need why would there be any emotional connection whatsoever from either side, right? With Terry McLaurin, it was different. You know, Josh Harris and Adam Peters and Dan Quinn and everybody else understood his value to the fan base, to the organization, to the history of it. And the type of professional that Terry McLaurin was throughout the entire time that he had a different quarterback throwing him the football every single year, usually pretty inaccurately. Now, that doesn't mean that, again, you factor that in only so much, if at all, but you knew that was going to get resolved. So that's the difference between that type of contract negotiation or holdout or hold in or whatever we're calling them at this point versus that type of real drama, trade request, holdout, you know, a George Pickens or a Dexter Lawrence, whatever. And look, the NFC as a whole is very wide open. Like, it's not just the NFC East. Yeah, and I still think the Eagles are the best team in the NFC East. They got a really good defense. We'll see what Saquon Barkley looks like this year. But the NFC as a whole, I mean, you really go, it's Rams and who else? 49ers won 12 games last year, but are they going to be the same team as last year? They didn't really make that much in terms of additions this offseason. They're getting older. What about Christian McCaffrey? At what point did the injury start to settle in again? I mean, I understand the year that he had last year, but you're playing with fire. You're playing with fire. With Christian McCaffrey, it's just how it works at that position, right? Even if they want to move him to a slot receiver more at some point. I mean, you know, you're going to be dealing with that. Trent Williams is, what, 37 now? I know he's got a new deal. He's always got a new deal. Dude hustles. But they got older. I mean, Mike Evans is, what, 33, and they sign him? You know, as much as I love Brock Purdy, dude needs talent around him. So you're dealing with that. Seahawks lost a bunch in free agency this offseason. The Bears won 11 games last year, but that's 1 year under Ben Johnson. Caleb Williams still wildly inaccurate as a quarterback. That's still a problem. You start going down the NFC and you're looking around going, who do you really trust? Everybody's got holes. And yeah, you could say the same thing about the Rams. And I get it. Every team is going to have a question. No team is perfect. But it just feels like the NFC is very similar to what the East is and the path for the Wizards to get sort of near the top in the next couple of years. Because again, you're thinking long term with that, right? You're thinking that long term with the Wizards, and you're thinking a long term with the Commanders, where, all right, what you're building now, it's not just about next year. It's about the years to come. You don't want to be a firework. You don't want to be a, ooh, this is fun, and that's it. It's all done, and it's over, right? That was 2024 for the Commanders. You come back this year, well, last year now. I always struggle with when you get to the point of this season versus last season for the same season, right? I guess after the draft, maybe before the draft. I don't know. But, you know, you look at a five-win season and go, what's now the trajectory going to be for this team? You think it's trending up. You think it's pointing up. But if you're the Commanders, you're building a team that you also want to be a competitive team in the NFC for years to come. And it's much more wide open than the AFC that's dealing with young quarterbacks that are going to be around with those teams for a while at the top of the AFC, defenses that are really good. But in the NFC, the team that right now, at least on paper, is the best, in my eyes, it's the Rams, but Matt Stafford's getting older, and hell, Ty Simpson might be their quarterback next, which is, I guess, the goal when you draft a guy at 13 knowing he's not going to play at all this year. So the NFC, not just heading into next season, but even moving forward, you start to look and you go, there is a path to where you are building, and it's not just banging your head against a wall, right? It's not just like, no matter what we do, this stupid team's always going to be here. That's the Thunder. That's the Spurs over in the West in the NBA. In the AFC, it's probably going to be the Broncos. It's probably going to be the Patriots. Sorry, it's going to be the Patriots again. You know, there's at least two teams there that you look at. Because, again, the Patriots addressed offense after already addressing their defense last year. They were in the Super Bowl because of their defense. Now they address things offensive line, wide receiver a little bit more. Probably going to have A.J. Brown. So, yeah, you're looking in the AFC where it could be years of the Broncos and the Patriots at the top there. But who's really a team that you look at in the NFC right now and you go, they're going to be at the top of this thing for a long time? There's none, right? There really isn't any team. I mean, the Rams are the closest thing right now because you're starting to see other teams get older. Now, Howie Roseman, aggressive GM, could get the Eagles right back to the Super Bowl in a year. But if your quarterback lowers your ceiling, you always are going to be in that spot where you're trapped. Great quarterback play, we know, is the difference maker. I know it's not the only thing, and I know what happened in the Super Bowl. I get it. That was an anomaly. That does not happen every year. You can't get to a Super Bowl in spite of your quarterback. And that's what the Patriots did. And I get it. Drake May was a runner-up to win MVP last year. But that was the regular season, not the playoffs. You're not going to see a team go on the run the Patriots did. They also went through teams that just had quarterbacks that forgot how to play football. Let's also remember that. I mean, C.J. Stroud was one of them. Just like, what? Did you forget? Did the Monstars come and take away your skill? I mean, it was embarrassing. So, like, okay. You at least have an understanding there of like where some of those teams are going to go. The NFC is just one of those conferences that right now feels very volatile. And it's a great time for this Commanders team to take that next step. But then you've got to have that consistency and you've got to have that longevity that's sitting there. That's what makes a real franchise, like a true winner, a true competitor. Year after, you're always going to have to retool. You're always going to have to add new players. You're always going to have to deal with some contract one year that's going to be big. That you, all of that, I get it, is part of it. But when the foundation is there, there's always that possibility of at least being a playoff team and one or two pieces from helping making you like a true contender again. That's the difference, and that's where the Commanders want to get themselves. And the NFC is allowing that to be pretty wide open right now. All right, Nick Ashew on the Fan. Nick Ashew on the Fan. Sixers with an early 8-7 lead over the Knicks. First game of the second round of the NBA playoffs going on right now. I'll tell you what, Madison Square Garden definitely is, that's where everybody wants to be seen when the Knicks are winning. Isn't it funny how that works? All of a sudden, the legendary Knicks show back up. You know, you got all these celebrities sitting courtside. Everybody wants to be seen when the Knicks are actually winning again. It's funny to think the Knicks haven't won a title since, what, 73? But everybody loves to hype up the Garden because it's you've built a culture that's there. And even when the team's losing, it's like, well, at least you're at Madison Square Garden. It's funny. It's like nobody will ever insult as, oh, my God, Karl Anthony Towns just got rocked. His legs got taken out from under him. He might be hurt. That's going to be, let me tell you something right now, man. If Karl Anthony Towns misses time in this series, the Knicks are cooked. Because he's been a big reason why they came back from that early 2-1 deficit. He fell, he might have just landed on his tailbone. Maybe he's all right. What do you think, Wesley? You watching it right now? Or are you too busy watching Ohio State football highlights? Because right now, Karl Anthony Towns definitely looks like he landed on his tailbone, and that's brutal. Nah, he might be all right. He's Karl Anthony Towns. He's sometimes just really over the top. You watching this, Wesley? No.
I am not.
Okay. Well, then what good are you? You're supposed to be watching what's going on. No, why are you doing other things?
Because I was paying attention to the Major League Baseball scores.
Oh, my God. Do I need to call Chris Russell up right now?
Yeah,
do I need him to come on and scold you?
Yes.
All right. I might do that.
Like Harold. He'll start just yelling.
Oh, look, Harold. You're supposed to be watching. He'd probably tell you to watch hockey, though. That's the thing. That's his bit.
That's why cricket.
Yeah. That's why. Yeah, that's why we always fight. I always fight with him because then he'll purposely insult the NBA and then he'll just make it a thing. And it's how it works. But, you know, it's when you have. It's just funny how culture works, though, with a lot of teams around sports, because you can have a losing organization, but if you've got as famous arena and you're playing in New York, you still always have some level of prestige that's there. But I mean, this thing, Knicks have won a title since the early 70s. I mean, that's,
yeah, you know. It's like that, you know, there's examples in that in college and other leagues. Nebraska football sells out every single week on a Saturday, and they haven't won since the 90s.
I would put Iowa football up there too.
Yeah, it's wild. They still show up.
Well, I mean, it's one thing for fans to show up, right? Like, it's you're there, you're supporting your team, it's whatever. But it's I think there's the, and again, we all get there at some point. But it's the delusional fan that thinks like Nebraska football, like you said, if you're talking about college football being one, and you have it certainly in the NFL too. You know, where there's certain franchises. Here's what I'd be curious to see. If the Chiefs take a step back, hear me out on this, Wesley. If the Chiefs take a step back, now I know Patrick Mahomes right now on track in his rehab with his knee and everything else, but if the Chiefs have another season like they did this past season, because remember, they were what, 6-8 before Mahomes got hurt anyway? If the Chiefs have another season in a loaded AFC where they barely make the playoffs, or they, you know, completely miss it altogether, at what point do Chiefs fans and does the organization start to look delusional? Because they've gotten real sloppy over the last few years when it comes to surrounding Patrick Mahomes with talent, because you're cocky. You got Patrick Mahomes, and I get it. But you got a lot of walking brain farts at wide receiver for them that made a lot of mistakes. And I get it. You count on the refs to bail you out, but it doesn't happen every single time. At what point do the Chiefs fans start to become delusional because of the history that they've had? I mean, it could happen really quickly.
May add mistakes on the field and off the field with their talent, their wide receivers.
On the field how?
I'm saying on the field and off the field mistakes.
Oh, yeah. Well, like Rashee Rice, obviously. Yeah, that's, yeah. But I just mean in general. Like,
oh,
I mean, listen, Rashee Rice is talented, but look at what else they've had there, especially with the time that he's missed. They've tried to add other talent. That's been, it's just, you know, they've never gotten aggressive when it comes to adding wide receivers in free agency,
never.
For example.
Never.
They never do it.
I mean, they had an opportunity to do it in this draft and they didn't do it. They traded up in front of the Commanders, who were, to be honest, were probably still going with Styles, and went Delaney.
I don't know, though. They needed Mansoor Delaney. They needed a corner, so I'll give them credit for that.
I know, but the thing is, you're talking about the most athletic draft pick in a historic way with Sonny Styles. I think they were going with Sonny Styles.
You think the Commanders were going with Sonny Styles no matter what?
Yes.
What about with over Caleb Downs too? Well, I mean, obviously they did, but, you know.
Yes, I do. I'm really not sure about the hype on Delaney. I saw him at Virginia Tech. Yeah, he's really good, but for the sixth pick in the draft, no. I would go spend money for a corner. That's a position that needs to develop. Linebackers can come in and be good. Luke Kuechly is actually an example of who, when I think of somebody, that's Sonny Styles.
Sonny Styles has so much upside for this team. It's just he's going to now be under so much pressure to essentially be the green dot, handling everything on the defense, playing multiple positions, to where it's not going to be the level that you throw at a quarterback, but I'm just telling you now, I know how it's going to go.
Of course.
And there is going to be a level of like, okay, he has one bad game, and everybody's going to be like, see? Not worth it. Although, at least you don't have the falling back on, well, they had Jeremiah Love available, or they had Carnell Tate available. Or Delaney, even at that point. I feel like Commanders fans, though, if you look at this fan base, we're far less into like the Mansoor Delaney potential before the draft. Like, Jeremiah Love was just next level, right? And I get it. Dude's immensely talented, but this defense just needed pick after pick after pick and addition after addition after addition. I mean, it was just so bad. They gave up over 384 yards of total offense last year. You can't do that. Like, you just can't.
That's insane.
I know.
And also, Sonny Styles would drop into coverage. Once he went into the linebacker position, Ohio State still dropped him into coverage, which is something else that obviously the Commanders need. This is a two-way player in a way on the defensive side.
Is Ohio State now, and I know you're biased, but do we look at Ohio State the way we looked at, like, Georgia a few years ago, or Alabama under Nick Saban is like a pipeline to the NFL with all, like, are they now the top NFL prospect pipeline in your eyes?
Well, of course. I mean, historically, they have had the most draft picks and the most.
Yeah, but not like over the course of 50 years. I'm talking like right now.
Oh, I mean, yes. I mean, the 2024 team, every single defensive player was drafted, including backup Arvell Reese, who ended up being the highest draft pick out of all of them.
Because that's the thing. I mean, when you look at what Ohio, it's usually a few programs, but you have these moments where it was Georgia for a few years, especially that Georgia defense, Alabama for a long time under Nick Saban, but now it kind of feels like it has shifted more to Ohio State as like, and sometimes it's just recruiting classes, right? These dudes are here for 3 years or 4 years or whatever, and it's going to kind of cycle through in those moments, but Ohio State's kind of in that. I feel like they're at the top of the mountain when it comes to like just feeding the NFL.
Yeah, I think it changes. Ohio State, when they won the national championship in 2014 and, you know, that 2015 class, Joey Bosa came out, Zeke Elliott, and a couple years later, Chase Young, Jeff Okuda, and then obviously now with Carnell and Sonny Styles. And then, of course, the Georgia team. It rotates between Ohio State, Georgia, Alabama, and maybe Oregon now because of NIL. So, yes, right now, Ohio State would be the pipeline because 14 last year, 11 picks this year, most out of anyone on just in general in the draft and draft picks itself in terms of program. So, yeah, right now, yes.
How do we feel about Kelly Oubre's two-tone hair? I kind of like this. Kelly Oubre can kind of do whatever he wants. I've just learned that with Kelly Oubre. He makes anything cool.
That.
Yeah. He just makes any. He's one of those guys that whatever he does is just cool. I don't know what it is.
Who was that guy he charged when he was on the Wizards? The guy was on the Celtics, and he ran to his chest.
Was that Kelly Olynyk?
Yes.
It was Kelly Olynyk, yes. That's why we all hate Kelly Olynyk with the Heat and with the Celtics.
Yep, you're right.
Yeah. Yeah, the Sixers Sixers look good right now. I'll tell you what. This is a team that's riding a lot of confidence right now. You go into the Garden. If they steal game one at the Garden, that's a lot of pressure on the Knicks. There's really no pressure on the Sixers, honestly. Like I know people want to sit there and be like, well, Joel Embiid, you know, he's supposed to be the guy to deliver a championship to the Sixers. And yeah, but they're a seventh seed. This Knicks team is playing really good basketball right now. There's far more pressure on the Knicks to win this series and win this game one, because if the Sixers go in and even keep this close and they lose even by, you know, it's a one-possession game, they're going to feel good heading into game two. And they have two opportunities to steal one game and steal home court advantage as a seven seed. Now, yes, on paper, on the court, healthy, like they're better and more talented than the seven seed, but that's really what this Sixers team's always dealt with, is not having this core group together. Paul George missing a ton of time with injuries and suspensions and disappearing in the playoffs, and Embiid always hurt, random ailments. I mean, the guy's gone through all kinds of health issues. It's insane. And, you know, the Sixers have just never had this team out there consistently, and they have had championship aspirations for years, and it just shows you how tough it is to win an NBA title. And when you're dealing with the Thunder, like at some point, whoever this is probably going to have to face Thunder in the finals, and they're just going to probably beat up whoever it is anyway. Thunder are going to be doing this for a while. I hope people realize the way that the Thunder will be viewed will be villains in a short amount of time. Because even the Warriors were, minus the Kevin Durant short stint, they were a homegrown team that won championships before and after Kevin Durant. And people just started hating them because they're winning. It happens. Even though it was like they built the team the right way, minus, again, the short Kevin Durant window, drafted guys well, you know, just that the Thunder are going to be the new villains in the NBA. It's going to take a few years, and I get it. They're not the Lakers. They're not in this big market, but eventually it's going to happen. Sixers up 17-16 on the Knicks, 4:39 to go in the first quarter. Nick Ashew on the Fan. Nick Ashew on the Fan. Flyers up 2-1 on the Hurricanes in the second. Knicks up 24-19 on the Sixers. I saw this, and Wesley Clark, our fearless producer, will be very excited about this. C.J. Stroud's offseason, he's been dialed in, according to D'Amico Ryans.
He has. He's
all those strength sessions, the coaching sessions, and the meetings. He's focused on everything because your quarterback forgot how to play football in the playoffs. Here's the thing. We are not that far away from the Jaden Daniels contract conversation. I cannot wait to see what the Texans and what the Panthers do with Bryce Young and C.J. Stroud, because both of them have a lot of questions, but yet at the same time, we know what having no quarterback means and being in the market for a quarterback means. And we've gotten to the point now where it's just quarterback contracts have gotten so expensive, they need to have max contracts in the NFL, or, I don't know, put quarterbacks on a separate salary cap, anything, because it just hinders the rest of the organization, and it puts these teams in these situations where you're kind of stuck, where it's like, yeah, you're a good quarterback, you're a middle-of-the-pack quarterback, but are you somebody that should be getting $300 million or whatever it ends up looking like? And it's, well, that guy got paid that much, and, well, you got to be the next guy up. And I know we've gone away a little bit from that with some of these contracts, like, you know, a Sam Darnold or even a Brock Purdy to an extent. But when you look at what we saw from C.J. Stroud in the playoffs, how can you feel confident in him as a quarterback until you actually see it on the field again this year? And Bryce Young's had questions from the beginning. And yeah, the Panthers made the playoffs last year, but they're 8-9. They snuck in, and okay, they looked decent in their wild card game, sure. But are you going to trust Bryce Young for 5 more years and a huge deal? I mean, it's finding that balance, because obviously the team's going to look to get that number as low as possible, and then you got an agent that's going to be like, nah, man, he's a quarterback. You got to pay your quarterbacks. Go ahead and try to find somebody else. And it's a reasonable argument, because did you see what it looked like in the draft and in free agency when it came to quarterbacks that were available? Thank God the Commanders have Jaden Daniels, even with the questions, even with the worries about whether or not he can stay healthy. It's better to be in that situation than sitting there going, so is Kyler Murray going to be our guy? Maybe we wait on Aaron Rodgers and see if he's available? I mean, that's what it looks like. It's such an important position that teams like the Texans and teams like the Panthers, one, are going to obviously say great things about their quarterbacks. What's D'Amico Ryans going to say? Oh, yeah, he hasn't been that great. He's not really doing very much this offseason. No, he's going to say everything that needs to be said. As a Texans fan, Wes,
yeah,
what do you think this contract looks like for C.J. Stroud? Because I'm fat. You are dialed. Like, that, to me, is such an interesting precursor to what you could be looking at for Jaden Daniels, right? Because if Jaden Daniels is still missing some games, still dealing with some injuries, that's going to lower the value of that contract a little bit and what the Commanders probably want to offer him. So as opposed to, like, getting a Patrick Mahomes-type deal if he can't stay healthy. Now, if he stays healthy and looks like he did his rookie year, he's going to get paid and no one's going to complain. But if there's questions, then you're in kind of the Texans' boat or the Panthers' boat trying to figure out C.J. Stroud and Bryce Young.
Yeah, well, in C.J.'s case, his agent is obviously going to be, he's going to go into that meeting and say, your quarterback has never lost less than 10 games in a season, which quarterbacks haven't really done to start their career. He's up there with John Elway. So that's going to be a talking point from the agent. And I understand, trust me, I was there. I drove up to Pittsburgh, and I watched that disaster of a game that the defense like actually won. In fact, the defense scored some of the points. And the Pittsburgh missed a few field goals. You put anyone out there, and I was under the impression that Davis Mills should have been in the game against the Patriots, not because he's better, but because if they pan the camera to CJ, and I've never seen someone more depressed on the sideline. I think there's a major quarterback coach issue as well, and maybe some sort of mentor that he just doesn't have, because your quarterback shouldn't, it should be one snap clear. You make a mistake, okay, I mean, that's the pass. You go out there and act like nothing happened. He didn't act that way. I mean, he was scared. He couldn't even throw the ball, which is something that, I mean, I've been watching CJ since, I was 18 years old. It's been 6 years, something like that, ever since he started at Ohio State. I've never seen him like that ever in my life. So I think the contract, I mean, we see Daniel Jones around $44 million. I think you'll get CJ at 49.
C.J. Stroud completed 42% of his passes in that game and had four interceptions. And it's funny because you talk about how bad it looked against Pittsburgh. I mean, he still completed 65% of his passes and only threw one interception, right? Like,
The fumbling was more of an issue.
Yes.
Now, the center did have a tough game. And I will say, when Nico Collins went down, he didn't have anyone to throw to. Dalton Schultz went down, one of the best tight ends in the NFL. Cade Stover hurt his foot. So the talent, Tank Dell, obviously was out for the year. Stephon Diggs 2 years ago tore his ACL. So he's had problems with his wide receivers and his tight ends getting hurt. And the Texans have asked him to be Patrick Mahomes in these cases, and he's not. He's C.J. Stroud, who's he can take you to the championship game, but he needs help, which 99% of quarterbacks need.
See, that's my thing, is most quarterbacks need help. Most quarterbacks need talent around them. It's like that's been the criticism of Brock Purdy. Oh, well, he needs talent around him. He's in a great offense. Yeah, and he's succeeding. It's not like he's average. Brock Purdy, when he came back, week 11 or whatever it was after he was hurt, I mean, the 49ers the rest of the regular season until their final regular season game was the number one offense in the NFL then. I mean, they're elite when he's playing at his best. You have to surround – I mean, how many quarterbacks can we really name where you would say no matter who's around them, they still win games talent-wise? Like Patrick Mahomes, obviously. That's why the Chiefs got so cocky for years when it came to the lack of weapons around him for the most part. Tom Brady would absolutely be in that category. But again, now we're talking about a quarterback that's retired. How many quarterbacks that are active in the NFL right now?
I don't know.
I mean, Mahomes. Maybe Josh Allen would be in the category there, but
yes,
I mean, he's got a great running back, so that at least helps a little
someone
bit.
Someone would probably say Lamar.
I could put Lamar in that category. I could maybe put Lamar in there.
But the point still stands.
Right.
There's not many.
And now, and remember, too, we named, quarterbacks that are a little more mobile and look to run more, too, in a Josh Allen and a Lamar Jackson than C.J. Stroud.
For sure. And people have seen the accuracy of C.J. Stroud. So that's why everyone is just, I mean, they just don't know. They what happens to him, it's almost like in cold weather, but again, he played Ohio State and played in the snow, so that can't be an issue. I don't know what it is.
Do you think it's the yips? Could it be the yips carrying over to this year?
It's possible. I mean, obviously he had a great rookie season and high expectations. He's been to the playoffs 3 straight years. I'm not sure. I really don't know, because he came back from an injury. Davis Mills filled in, won 3 games. And then he ended up continued the winning streak and got to the playoffs and had the longest winning streak in the NFL. So I don't know. I mean, no one has an answer for CJ. It's something that we have never seen. It's not like it's a fall off the yips. It's possible. We saw Rick Ankiel, one of the best pitchers in Major League Baseball, and he couldn't even throw a strike, and he had to move positions.
Chuck Knobloch, too, couldn't throw from second base. I mean, it happens. It happens a lot in baseball, which just shows you how, because you got to be so precise, it just becomes so mental. I mean, golfers the same way, too. You get the yips putting, and, all this is mental. I think sometimes people forget that there's a mental side of this. So if you're D'Amico Ryans, you got to do everything you can to get your quarterback's head right and forget what happened to end last season, because
I don't know who. It might have been Christian Kirk. CJ, he was starting to throw the ball a little bit more against the Patriots. And
you talking about the playoff game?
Yes. And the ball slipped through Kirk's hand, which it was right. It was right on his helmet, and it ended up getting picked off. And since that moment, it was, I think, the third or fourth interception, he was done. I mean, he had a nice pass to Christian Kirk. He dropped it, and it hit off his helmet, and he got picked off. And I think that was it. At that moment, it wasn't clicking between the wide receivers and CJ, and I think they should have put Davis Mills in.
Now, also, the weather was bad there, too, which does play a factor.
Yeah, it does, but we all saw the pick six.
Oh, yeah. Don't get me wrong. I'm not making excuses for C.J. Stroud at all. He forgot how to quarterback in that game. I mean, it was like he completely forgot there was a game that day. But the weather does not help in those situations for quarterbacks. But that's also when the game plan needs to be adjusted, too. You're going to have to run the ball more. You're going to have to find ways to make your quarterback a little more successful when it's just nasty snow. And that goes back to what I said. Let me tell you something. Honestly, Snow games in the regular season, fun, good to watch on TV. I don't want them in the playoffs. Don't need it. I want teams to be as full strength as possible. And I know, oh, well, both teams play in the snow when they do. I don't care. I don't. One team may be better in the snow than the others. One team may have better sticky gloves than the others. I don't want to see it. I hate snow playoff games. Regular season's cool. Can't stand it in the playoffs because you get stuff like that. We had a bunch of those in these past playoffs, too.
No, 100%. I mean, you're talking about a team such as the Texans who have to play in a dome stadium because they'll have to play in 117 degrees, and all of a sudden they have to go to Kansas City and play. And I was at that Kansas City game, the Texans-Chiefs game.
Oh.
That was Mahomes' last full game. CJ had a nice game, actually.
So cold.
Which he actually beats. It's actually wild. He plays really well against the Chiefs somehow, some way. Every time, but it was cold. And
how cold was it? Do you remember?
It was Big Ten weather.
Yeah, it was Big Ten weather.
Yeah, the boys down the SEC, they don't know what's up. That's how cold it was.
Yeah, it's snow games in the regular season. That's why I don't care about Commanders having an indoor stadium, putting a roof over that. Yeah, give me that. We don't. I don't need the snow. I don't need snow games in the playoffs. Regular season's cool. Get it away from me in the playoffs. Knicks up 33-24 on the Sixers. 7 seconds to go in the first quarter of this game one of their Eastern Conference semifinal game. Nick Ashew on the Fan. Nick Ashew on the Fan. And, you know, the quarterback contracts and the questions and the poking the holes and the negotiations, it's going to be a forever thing in the NFL. This is never going to change. But, you know, some quarterbacks get put in positions to at least succeed and have an opportunity, and some just never get a shot. Like the fifth-round option or fifth-year option for Anthony Richardson didn't get picked up by the Colts. We all knew that was going to happen. He asked for a trade. They're looking to move him anyway. But it just never – you knew that was never going to work. He barely had any experience in college and high school starting, and you're going to bring this guy in, fourth overall pick, and you're going to start him right, what, a couple games into the season and expect this guy to just be ready to go? And I get it. He got hurt his rookie year, looked okay. What would he have done for the entire season? We saw what happened after that. Barely completing. He's completed less than 50% of his passes. He's not ready. We see this so many times. It's like, remember the Progressive commercial? We all know this, right? You've seen it, the purple hair, and we all see it. We all see it. I just feel like every year we see a team in the NFL do this with a quarterback, and you can see it way before the story's actually told, way before the end of the movie. We go, we've all seen this movie before. Every single time, not every quarterback is ready to start right away. They're just not. And I get it. We live in this world now where these quarterback contracts are expensive. And yes, you got to pay these guys. And yes, we're going to be doing that with Jaden Daniels probably in a couple of years. I mean, really, it's after this season, you can start talking about it. So that becomes a conversation before you can actually officially have the conversations. So everything Jaden Daniels is going to do is going to be nitpicked. And if he struggles at all, people are going to just rip him apart. We saw the same thing with Bryce Harper. Bryce Harper was a hero in D.C. until Juan Soto popped up and we went, oh, maybe we don't need Bryce Harper after all. And then it was the last year of his deal with the Nats. And then it was like $300 million for what? And then everybody's just, Bryce Harper's the villain. And then he leaves for Phillies, and it's even worse after that. But this is what is going to happen if Jaden Daniels isn't like downright perfect. Fair or not, that's just how it works. But there's a difference, obviously, between Jaden Daniels and Anthony Richardson and the careers that they've had so far. Jaden Daniels was obviously ready to start week one of his rookie year, and some quarterbacks are. But you know the difference between a Jaden Daniels who started right away, a Bo Nix who started right away, even a Caleb Williams, even though it hasn't been great, it's been a little bit of a roller coaster, he still started right away. These guys all played, you know, multiple years in college. They started a lot of games. And if you really look, and including that entire draft class in 2024, a lot of them transferred. A lot of them started off at different programs and then transferred to a bigger program, you know, Indiana to Washington for Michael Penix Jr. Bo Nix was, you know, I mean, still was SEC, so it was a little bit different for him. But Bo Nix started, what, like 1,000 games in college? I mean, it felt like he just was there forever. But he had a lot of college experience. And Caleb Williams had a lot of college experience. Now, he's still lacking that accuracy, but you know, they weren't going to not start him. And you knew Jaden Daniels was going to get that experience playing in the SEC after transferring from Arizona State. And it's, I mean, even, look, J.J. McCarthy, with all the injuries he's dealt with, the guy had a lot of experience playing in the Big Ten. You have to have that college experience before you can really be ready in the NFL. And it's going to be really interesting to see what happens with Ty Simpson's career. Because Ty Simpson getting drafted where he was drafted, knowing that he's not the guy right now, is actually a really good spot for someone that does not have a lot of experience. He started 15 games in college. Now, we know he's not going to start, and he may not even see any time whatsoever, even if Matt Stafford were to get hurt, because it's really a question of what Jimmy Garoppolo is going to do. Talk about him retiring. I don't believe that. I think he's probably going to be, you know, their backup. But, hey, could be wrong. He could end up changing his mind. But either way, Ty Simpson sits. He learns from veterans. He's in the Sean McVay offense. Even if Sean McVay doesn't want him there, don't worry, he's just grumpy. That's why he looked that way after they had the press conference with Les Snead. No, it's just he's grumpy. That's all that it is. No, that's, yeah, we could really tell Sean McVay was really happy about that pick, drafting a guy that's not going to contribute at all to the team. But even besides all that, if you're Ty Simpson, you're in a good place to learn, to grow, to develop as a quarterback with no pressure. Ty Simpson is not looked at as a quarterback that is saving the Rams. Most quarterbacks drafted where he was drafted, middle of the first round, you're expected to be the franchise savior. He's not. The expectations are so low on Ty Simpson, it's unbelievable. For a quarterback drafted as high as he was, it's probably the lowest expectations that we'll have for a first-round pick at quarterback since... I can't even think of somebody. You could maybe argue Kenny Pickett, but Kenny Pickett you knew was going to get thrust in, was supposed to be the guy for the Steelers, which was a terrible pick. But like Ty Simpson, there's nothing. There's no expectations for him. So it'll be interesting to see what happens when he's eventually out there, whenever Matt Stafford retires, how long this goes, what that process looks like, because he might actually develop into a pretty decent quarterback. I mean, listen, if you're going to do what the Rams did, you better be sure that it's going to work. And maybe Sean McVay doesn't stick around, but at least you'll have 1 year of Sean McVay to learn under, if anything. And Ty Simpson might be that example of somebody that you could say, oh, okay, maybe sitting and learning a little while as a quarterback's a good thing. We don't always have to throw these quarterbacks out week one of their rookie year. Never was going to work for Anthony Richardson. Some guys are ready, but not every one of them is. And this whole notion of like, well, you can surround them with other talent. Yeah, but if they're out there and they're terrible, who cares? Then they're just developing bad habits. They look terrible. And then they start thinking, oh, God, can I play? Can I play at this level? The mental side is so important. That's why D'Amico Ryans is saying all these nice things about C.J. Stroud right now. Knicks up 41-33 on the Sixers now. Kelly Oubre just hitting a three. Kelly Oubre has been so good with the Sixers. It was fun with the Wizards, though. Tell you what. Nick Ashew on the Fan.